Check out my new book, Coping Courageously, a heart-centered guide for navigating a loved one's illness without losing yourself. It's appropriate for you as a clinician, for your patients, and for anyone you know who has a seriously ill loved one or an aging parent. Check it out and tell a friend. I'm Dr. Delia Caramonti. Welcome to the Integrative Palliative Podcast, where I give physicians who care for people with serious conditions the tools they need to help their patients thrive at any stage of illness. My motto is whole person care for people with serious illness using all the tools that work. This approach is the ultimate win-win because patients are happy and physicians enjoy practicing medicine again. There is a better way and we'll find it together. Let's get started.
Welcome, integrative palliative people. Today we have an incredibly special guest. We have Lolly Forsyth Chisholm, who is an amazing mind-body specialist and is really an innovator in this field of mind-body medicine. And she's going to tell us what she does, what the value is of a mind-body specialist, and then give us some tips that we can use for ourselves and for our patients. Welcome, Lolly.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation.
We're so happy to have you. Yeah. So I'm going to start just by asking you to tell us a little bit about your amazing background. So tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are and what you're doing now.
Oh, okay. So my story starts in about 2008 when my son was diagnosed with leukemia. And he's doing well now. We were in the hospital in Baltimore at University of Maryland and really struggling after, you know, months of hospitalization. And the integrative team there brought in the idea of him using Reiki. And this was a really powerful time that empowered him to be able to do his own self-care and really changed the trajectory of how he and I thought of what had happened to us. We both went on to become Reiki masters, and I studied yoga. And then I was able to join the integrative and palliative team there and spent about 10 years at University of Maryland Shock Trauma on the team and learned a lot about, studied guided imagery, went on to get my master's in palliative care, and really got some good experience treating patients, family, and staff at bedside. And then, you know, moved on to Gilchrist in just before the pandemic. So spent about 2 years there working with patients, family, and staff on an integrative and palliative team.
That is a remarkable story. So you started first by receiving this unique way of helping a patient and family cope, and then turned that around to be somebody who helps patients and families cope using these other mind-body modalities and Reiki, et cetera.
Right, right. But I saw the power of self-care within being a receiver of it, but also noticed that a nurse who came in the room and had that presence about her, that she was also calm and able to transfer that same experience, meant the world. And it meant just as much sometimes as the delauded, the compassionate care was extremely powerful. Saw the power of that and felt the need also, being a caregiver at bedside, that there was, you know, not a lot of resources for that side of the story. So became really passionate in self-care for healthcare workers, as well as caregiver care that we can offer through the hospital.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. So do you think it makes a difference if the caregivers learn to take care of themselves? Do they do a better job of caring for the patients?
Yeah. And that's where, you know, my son was 11 at the time. And as a patient, you're laying there and you're feeling energies. You're just kind of wide open for what's being brought in the room. You're also in that vulnerable space. And as a caregiver, kind of the same thing. As a mama bear, maybe a little bit at the bedside, sure. You're super protective. And so I think Tommy and I really honed our skills of noticing and taking in energies. And that was a very powerful lesson that when a caregiver came in and had that calm presence and that compassionate presence. Some of the stories we remember were the nurses who were, what else can I bring you? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't related to the medicines. It was a little, you know, can I get you a pen to color with, a little washcloth for, you know, Tommy would wear washcloths on his head. And, you know, it really just was a comfort measure. And it was just those little extra touches that really made our day. And when we had someone who would take that extra level, we noticed it. We noticed it for sure.
You know, in medical school, we don't really learn that. Right. We learn, right, you know, communication skills maybe, and that we should mm-hmm. knock on the door before we bust in. But really, I think we're taught that the medicines are king or the procedures are king.
Right.
But from a patient and family perspective, that's not always true.
Right, right. I always also really noticed to connect the dots. Sometimes people would say, well, Tommy's thriving because of the compassionate care. Yes, and the chemo,
yeah,
and the Dilaudid, and connecting those dots was so powerful. It had to be both. It really had to be both.
Exactly. And that's the whole philosophy, right, of integrative palliative care. It's not one or the other. It's both together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you practice integrative palliative care as a mind-body specialist. Can you tell us a little bit about what does a mind-body specialist do exactly? What is that?
Right. And it's so exciting because it is a really new area. And so I was super interested in mindset and how that made the huge difference also in how we were thinking of it. Tommy was amazing in that he always had the sense that he was going to do well. He always had this expectation of compassionate care even. And so I took the cue from his, you know, strong spirit in that and noticed that's what really sparked my interest and wanted to be trained in the guided imagery, because that's where we could really make the impact of, okay, I can take myself into this present moment. I can learn to evaluate what stories I'm telling. So that is I always like to say that's the bottom line of mind body sessions. It's really looking at how are you thinking of something and where can we put something in place, a technique that addresses that for you. And it's surprising. It's with pain. It's with how you're thinking of your medicines. It's with all those things that I call the extra we do. This pain will never end. This chemo doesn't feel like it's working. Those little tiny things that are really huge, that we can make a huge impact. So the mind-body sessions focuses there. Also using breath work. So I received training in yoga, using breath work, combining it with the guided imagery and practicing the skills of, okay, let me redirect, shift my attention, not to push anything away. And it's a subtle difference of just, okay, recognizing what's there and then taking a peaceful pause. So the mind-body session focuses there in different creative ways, sometimes even using expressive arts.
I love that about your work.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know what guided imagery is, would you mind giving them a little primer, telling people what that is?
Sure. So guided imagery focuses on what you're thinking already. And I love the story that some people say, well, I'm not very imaginative. And I always say, well, when you're nervous or worried, you notice that you sometimes see the worst case scenario. And the other thing is when you're thinking of having to do something that's frightening, like public speaking, your body has a response. Even when you're not there in front of the audience, you get nervous, you might get sweaty. And that is the response that we have to what our mind is thinking, a physiological response. So guided imagery leverages that same imaginative capacity that we all have, you know, and we might notice it when we're even just thinking of dinner, thinking of something exciting. So it's using that even if you feel like you're not an imaginative person.
So if I understand correctly, it sounds like you're saying that people use their imagination either for worry, They can imagine something bad right. that could happen, and that can change their physiology, or you can help guide them, or they can be guided in other ways to use their imagination for good.
Yes. Or shifting the mindset. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if a physician or nurse practitioner refers a patient to you and you're doing a mind-body session with them, with the patient, what does that look like?
Yeah, so I always introduce it, you know, that as relaxation techniques that really can help with pain, anxiety, and sometimes symptom management. So introducing it at the bedside, you know, I open it that people use different things already. And that's my opening question. What do you already use that helps you relax? Some people use music. Some people may use prayer. And some people like to write or draw. And just really recognizing that we can bring this to the bedside, you know, even in kind of a busy environment. The introductory guided imagery that I almost always start with is the body scan. And I just describe it and say, you know, it is about just closing your eyes and relaxing every body part. Really easy to understand, really easy to learn. And then we can practice it at bedside together. Generally, I have a singing bowl with me, which is a really soothing sound. And it's pretty big, but not so big that I can't carry it on my shoulder. I use a suede stick, and it has a tone like church bells in the distance or those nice big wind chimes that people have heard. And so that's a really nice technique at bedside to use the singing bowl with the very simple body scan. And I love that because I always want to say, I want to do this with you, but I want to leave you with a technique that you can do at night when I can't be there. Leave this with you and explain it to the nurse as her technique to remind the patient, hey, do that when you have to wait, when you're waiting for a procedure or you have to wait for medicine. And then they're collaborating on another technique and she's got something in her toolbox she can offer. You know, she can do it with the patient also. So it feels like it's an extra layer of support. And then patients can usually practice it on their own.
So that's the body scan, the relaxing that's the every part scan. In the room. That's yeah. great. And so when you see people in the hospital, that sounds like that's what you do.
That's the one I use, yeah, the most, because it is a Fantastic. Quick and easy one. And I've seen it work for pain as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. So these techniques can be used in the hospital, but then also you see patients as outpatients. So if somebody refers a patient to you for mind-body specialist care in the outpatient arena, how does that look like? What's the framework? What do you do with the patients then?
Right. So that one, you know, I'll have an hour generally, 45 minutes to an hour with a patient. So that one is a nice time where I can say, we can really look at three aspects that I like to break it up to, just because it's really easy to understand. So I break it into mind, body, and spirit. Mind, of course, would be what's going on, what thoughts, perceptions, beliefs, feelings would you have about what's going on. Body is how your body is feeling. Sometimes that's the area where we're focusing on pain or we're focusing on how, you know, symptoms and side effects. And then spirit, how are you connecting to that larger sense? And that one we usually would connect in with some self-compassion. Sometimes self-compassion's open the door to gratitude and awe. Mm-hmm. And that is a nice framework because a patient can then say, well, you know, I'm really having this feeling of disconnection. And that was a primary one during the pandemic. All the things that I could do to help are taken away. Mm-hmm. And so this feeling of isolation, sometimes a patient said, you know, that's the worst of it. And some patients, 100%, I'm focused on this pain and nausea. So we're focusing there. And then sometimes it is this sense of the inner critic or this sense of I have to take this toxic chemotherapy that is bad and I'm struggling with really deciding on that and having to do it. So then we would focus more on the mind techniques to really address that. And the nice part of an hour-long session is we're going to customize it really specifically to what's going on and hopefully give techniques and tools that they can use.
That's amazing. Can you teach us a little bit about what kinds of techniques you might use for patients? What are your commonly used ones?
Yes, for sure. One of my favorites is the 3-minute breathing space. And I love that one because it addresses things on the go. And the first part of it is the first minute is you notice what's there and you name what's there, whether that's fear, frustration, anger, even shame, just noticing what's there. And the reason noticing is so important is because once we're naming something, we are moving out of the fight, flight, freeze response into a more creative area of our brain. And it encourages us to accept that emotion. A lot of the stress and anxiety comes from our taking a lot of energy to push something away that we feel we should not be experiencing. So that's the first part of the 3 minutes. The second minute is just focused on breathing. That's the sensations of breathing, the rise and fall of the chest, the subtle sounds of breathing. Because also once you're focused on sensations, it's another way to bring you to this present moment away from thoughts. And the final minute, and you can abbreviate it. A minute is just kind of a guideline, but the last minute you focus on your whole body. And that's another really powerful way to move away from the stress response in the brain. Because once you're focused on your whole body, that shifts your mindset. And we don't usually focus on our whole body. We're focused on kind of certain areas that may hurt. And that's novelty is another thing that helps shift and move you into a different center of the brain. And once you do that, you can be in a space of responding and choice rather than this tight reactivity of the stress response. So that's one of my favorite techniques because it really works with all the things that we all do when we're in challenge, when we're in pain. We kind of tighten up. We kind of get that. We go into the stress response because you can do it on the go. And those are my favorite techniques because we can't always get to a meditation cushion yoga class. Great if we can, but 9 times out of 10, adding something extra into an already busy day, whether you're a health practitioner or a patient faced with appointment after appointment, adding something in that you feel you're not doing. I always want to be mindful of that and that kind of moves it into the body technique that I like for on the go, which is a really useful one, very similar to the naming the 3-minute breathing space, is you create an anchor for yourself. I call it a somatic anchor because that means the body based. And sometimes I will have a patient press the point, but the soft point between their thumb and their forefinger with their other thumb. So either hand, your thumb is right between your thumb and your forefinger, holding that point and using your breath to come to this present moment. That's a really powerful technique for pain because it does the same thing of the 3-minute breathing space, really helps you shift where your focus is, shift sometimes how you're thinking of pain. This pain will never end. The medicine isn't working. That extra component that we all tend to do it when we're in that tight pain space, it shifts your awareness. So having a somatic anchor. Another great example that I always use is a nurse told me she curls her toes because that was the farthest place she could get from her thoughts. Just to shift away from that kind of tight focus to help her move from maybe one patient to the next room, she would use that as her reminder to come and, focus, be in the present moment. So that's a really nice body-based technique along with the body scan, because you can also do that body scan kind of quickly. And then the last one to a technique, a quick on-the-go technique for connecting to spirit, is really create what I call a three mantra. And that's where you think of words that are meaningful for you that call you to the present moment. One that I use a lot while I'm getting the protective PPE on before going into a patient room is pause, presence, and proceed. Pause, notice where you are. Presence, connect in that you are part of a team, part of a larger team. And then proceed with your intention for compassionate presence. I think sometimes as healthcare workers, we kind of rush in headlong without taking that very quick moment, you know, just to realign why we're here. So I like that one. And there's other examples, but I want to give you a chance to weigh in and ask any questions.
I have always, before I enter a patient room, when we used to use actual soap and water, I would use that time to center myself and then bring some wish for compassionate presence to the patient. But now you can do it with Purell instead of with soap and water. That was always a way for me to change wherever my head was before I went into this patient's room to center before I went in to see that particular person. Yeah. So I think this is amazing. So people can choose three words that they need to hear, either for themselves or for the work that they're planning to do or for being present for another person.
Right. And the nice thing about creating your own is it addresses how you're feeling. When I'm worried about my children, for example, I'll use safety, courage, and joy. May they be safe. May they have the courage to make choices. And then, you know, may they have joy. And saying joy last in that instance helps me send them the joy. And then I can turn to my task, you know, in a different place. Still may be worried, but react to it differently. So it's that shift in your awareness that is really most powerful in any of the mind-body sessions.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. And what really strikes me about what you're saying is that these can be done in moments. So it's great that you have an hour with someone to teach them, but then when they go and live their regular life, they can take three breaths. They can imagine quickly from their head to their shoulders, to their belly, to their legs, to their feet, to relax those pieces and then bring to mind those three words for what they want to manifest. And you could do that in 30 seconds or a minute, right?
Right. And then the other very powerful aspect of having that time with the patient is we can create a guided imagery for specific situations, for waiting in a waiting room, for having to hold very still during a radiation treatment. Really cool techniques that patients have. We've worked together to customize a guided imagery that worked to have to hold still that long during radiation treatment, sometimes during a painful position. So one patient used a very, very creative imagery that she also encouraged her family to think of her during that time and send her love. Wow. So it was such a creative way that she came up with on her own to include her family who was really worried about her and could not come with her. Generally, during COVID, they couldn't come with her. So really hard for them. And the whole family used that time as a guided meditation. And patient was so relieved to feel their love while she had to hold so still.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You mentioned before that you sometimes use arts, visual arts or creative arts. Can you talk just a little bit about what that might look like?
Yeah. And that's a really fun creative time. Sometimes we'll use it with the inner critic. And patients will name the inner critic and use it as a writing exercise. Writing a letter, hearing the messages from inner critic is very powerful. Okay. And then I have a mom and a daughter. Daughter is the patient. And so she and her mom use the time to create cards for the family. So they celebrated a birth of a grandson and made cards and presents. And then the same patient and her mom are also creating a legacy box of information for this new baby of the time that the baby was born. So a really creative way to connect and find meaning and purpose.
Wow. It just strikes me how many tools you have and how many different ways you can maneuver these ideas to help people cope with whatever they specifically are dealing with. It's really remarkable.
And that, for me, that's the exciting part too, following the lead and listening to the creativity and the way that guided imagery and expressive arts and even the breath work really open people up to finally feeling seen and heard and bringing in self-compassion. It's something we are not great at, the self-compassion.
Given that, what do you think about using these techniques as a physician or as a nurse practitioner, as a nurse, not for the patient, but actually for themselves?
Many, many nurses have thanked me in the hall because the patient stopped pressing the call bell and they
Using these techniques with the patient helped the patient need them less.
Yes. And they were, one nurse said, you know, I was going to have to stay late, but because you came in and showed us both that technique, I was able to chart, finish my charting and get home on time. So I had a new best friend.
Wow. That's fantastic.
But yeah, and we think this will take a lot of extra time, but it saves time in the long run. And you've gone to that extra step of really building rapport when you are a doctor with certainly your expertise and your knowledge about medicine, and you have that little extra.
How about for a moment, we even take the patient out of the picture for a moment and just talk about the well-being of the physician or the well-being of the nurse or nurse practitioner?
Yeah.
What do you think about these techniques for physicians and other healthcare providers, for themselves, their own well-being?
Yeah. And I think through the pandemic, we've seen the levels of the work hours and the long, long times and the, you know, time even to process things. And that it has just come to that. It has to be on the list. It has to be on the list. It's something that we all feel together. We feel each other's energy, and your coworkers can tell, you know, when you're stressed and not caring for yourself. And so I think opening up to these smaller techniques that are doable, that are addressing your day as it's going along, the idea of really shifting the culture into not having that busyness as the badge and really shifting into the example that we give to each other when we do say, I need to take a pause. It's just going to change the whole culture of how we see each other, how we care for each other. Yeah. So I think it's top priority.
I agree with that for sure. So I always ask for a homework assignment, something that the people listening, the physicians and other healthcare providers listening, can try for themselves and then try for their patients. So do you have any very small suggestions of techniques that a physician, for example, might use as they're walking down the hallway or as they're, you know, working in their office or going through the hospital? What might they try this week? One thing.
One that makes a huge difference is just noticing how you talk to yourself for 1 week. Taking a look at that, noticing what comes across, and that's where the practice comes in, you know, naming the inner critic. You don't have to name that inner critic, but just for 1 week, notice how you talk to yourself, what the tone of the voice is. And the one question is, would you say that to a friend?
Powerful.
And it really, I've used that one, and I've had people say, no, I don't have an inner critic, and come back in a week and say, wow.
Right. So they didn't notice all the times they were saying, right. Oh my God, you're so stupid. Why did you do that?
Yeah. Things everyone's going to notice. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the whole idea comes from, we've all been in a classroom where a teacher uses shame. Mm-hmm. And yes, those children are, you know, listening. Once they've been shamed, but are they flourishing? And that's the question.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. So your homework this week is to pay attention to the way you're talking to yourself and seeing if it is as kind as it could be. And does it match the way you would talk to someone else that you care about? And if it doesn't, and it's unkind, to try to turn that around and make it be kinder and more compassionate towards you yourself.
Right.
Did I get that right?
Yes. Yep. Perfect.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Are there any last things that you think would be important for our audience to know about this whole topic, either for themselves or for their patients?
You know, it's just noticing. And that's that. It's a superpower. The self-awareness. The self-awareness is a superpower, because you are going to notice, you're going to start to recognize it, and you're going to make a choice before you react. You're going to be in that creative space to respond. And that's going to serve you in every arena of your life.
Molly, thank you so much. You are a gift. You are a gift to everyone that works with you. You're such a gift to your patients. Thank you so much for being an innovator in this incredibly important field. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
So thank you so much for being a part of this community. And remember, you cannot pour from an empty cup. So be sure to take care of yourself with what we just learned from Lolly, as well as you take care of your patients. And I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Integrative Palliative Podcast, brought to you by the Institute for Integrative Palliative Medicine. If you found value in this podcast, please share with a friend or a colleague, subscribe or leave us a review. And to learn about upcoming integrative palliative educational programs or get on the waiting list for our next Physician Scholars program, go to www.tiipm.org and sign up. And I'll see you next week.